Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is award-winning columnist Christopher Finolio. He is here to help parents have the center talk with their maturing children while preserving the magic of Christmas with a heartwarming poem titled Kristen and the Santa Secret. Good morning, Christopher. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Johnny. Thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure.
Fantastic. I love the poem. Your poem is very, very interesting, and it's beautifully written, so congratulations.
Well, thank you so much.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, I was born and raised in the Midwest. I was born a Hoosier in Indiana. We lived in Rockford, Illinois for many years through grade school and first couple of years of high school. So I really got to enjoy some good hard winters up in northern Illinois. You know, that's the place where the winter wind starts somewhere around Idaho and doesn't stop until it's, you know, past mm-hmm. Buffalo, New York. Just breezes right through. But you know, then towards the end of my sophomore year in high school, we moved to Bristol, Tennessee, and I spent the last couple of years in Bristol and fell in love with the great state of Tennessee. And after high school, I went to the University of Notre Dame, there for 4 years, a wonderful experience. I grew up in Catholic grade schools, Catholic high schools, except for the last 2 years in public high school in Bristol, Tennessee, but then went to Notre Dame, and just a wonderful experience there. Studied American studies, which is kind of a broad-based liberal arts degree, looking at American culture through American literature, American government, American history, and such. Did a lot of writing in those classes, as you can imagine. And also found time to sing all 4 years with the University of Notre Dame Glee Club, mm-hmm. which is an all-male chorus. And so it's probably Notre Dame doesn't have Greek fraternities and sororities. So the Glee Club was kind of the closest thing to a fraternity there on campus, and made some lifelong friendships in the Glee Club. And we traveled around the United States and over to Europe, you know, mm-hmm. singing concerts and such. It was just a wonderful experience. And then after graduation, I wanted to come back to Tennessee and moved to Nashville and got a job working for our local Catholic newspaper. And so really started my writing career then. You know, did a lot of writing in school and really liked the creative process of writing mm-hmm. Much more than, say, business writing or, you know, I once thought about going into law school, but I don't know, I just found a lot of different things in creative writing and just, you know, PR and editorial work, just so creative, and I really enjoyed that. So that's kind of where I started things. It's interesting, you know, I was working for our Catholic newspaper mm-hmm. for about a year and a half, and, you know, being a lifelong Catholic, you know, the idea of becoming a priest had always been in the back of everybody's mind, and I took a semester off just to go up to a seminary and study for a semester and, you know, kind of discern whether, you know, I wanted to explore that, and I realized that I didn't. But it was a great time off, you know, just a couple of years after college, where I really, you know, it was probably the best thing I ever did for my life. Is that, you know, mm-hmm. just a big, you know, 6 month retreat, just, you know, studying theology and philosophy and you know, and prayer and stuff, and just figure out that I wanted to have a family, and you know, that's a good ministry in itself. So came
that's
back
wonderful.
To Nashville and you know, started my many different careers.
It's one of those things where sometimes in life you have to check it out. I believe that you really have to check certain things out like that. I remember when I was in high school, I attended several weeks, and actually it's about a few months of being a novice so to speak. And it's something that you want to follow the spiritual side of you and take it as far as you can go and decide and make it, the decision. And that way you will never have to question yourself the what if.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's wonderful. Anyway, when did you get started writing poems?
Well, you know, Kristen and the Santa Secret is, I really consider that my first poem. You know, kind of a background behind that story. You know, I was the assistant editor for the Catholic newspaper for a couple of years and then went to work in the healthcare industry and in the music industry here in town. But then, you know, started, you know, writing again for the Catholic paper just as a columnist. And, you know, people always say, well, write about what you know. You know, write what you've got passion about. And so one of the ideas I created a column, a feature story on, was how my wife Linda and I told our children about Santa Claus, you know. And so what I wrote was kind of a, hey, parents, this is how we did it type of thing. And it got very nice response. And a year later, the same paper said, hey, can we reprint what you wrote last year because people are asking about it. And when I heard that people were asking about it, that's when I realized that perhaps, you know, the concept, the message that is in that feature story, which we'll get to in a little bit, you know, is really hitting home. And so that's when I decided, well, I need to figure out a, some sort of format to write this message in so that I could publish it. And, you know, this was, I guess this was 2005 or 2006 or something like that, when self-publishing was just starting to come on. And so, you know, I went to work on, you know, a short story. One of the titles was, you know, called, you know, Too Many Santas. And then there was another version, you know, set in Appalachia, Tennessee, you know, all with kind of the Santa message at the very end of the story. And it you know, as a piece of literary work, it just didn't flow very well, and all, it just seemed so contrived to get to the end. So that's when I decided, well, maybe if you know, if I write it as a poem, the just the structure of a poem will, you know, elevate the message a little bit. So I set about, you know, writing a poem, and I was writing, you know, rhyming lines and stuff like that, and was so, you know, proud of what I had written and, you know, some great words and stuff. And I sent it off to my cousin Denise, you know, who read it, and you know, she knows, you know, poetry and stuff. And she goes, well, you know, I like the ideas and I like the words you're using, but I really don't, you know, get the rhyme and meter that you're using.
Right.
And I was like, rhyme and meter, what exactly does she mean by that? So then I got on, you know, Wikipedia, was researching all the different rhyme and meters, and it's like, oh yeah, now I remember. And and so I, you know, realized that, you know, of course you've got to have a good structure to the poem. And you know, I said, well, what's a common structure that people will recognize? And so I picked the structure, I can't even remember the actual structure of the name. Someone out there would know. But it's the same structure as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. Dun-dun-dun, 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 dun-dun-dun. And, you know, with the accent on the third.
Right.
You know, there's 12 syllables per line, and there's the accent is on the third syllable. And so I was looking at 'Twas the Night Before Christmas and just, you know, putting that structure and reading that poem with that structure in mind, is like, wow, you know, the author really hit it, you know, each time. So then I went back and read what I had written that I had sent my, you know, cousin Denise, and the accents were like do 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 do. It was just like there was no rhyme or reason, you know, literally to that. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is so hard. And so then it's, you know, trying to it was like a big puzzle. It's like, well, I want to say the same. I want this thought to be right there, and I need it to rhyme at the end, but I also need the words that I use in the line to fall with the right accents and everything. And so it took me a good while to get the poem to the shape that it's in right now.
Very
but
interesting.
It was quite an eye-opening experience, and such an appreciation to poetry authors and
mm-hmm.
and to the author of A Visit from St. Nicholas, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, which many people
right.
say is Samuel Clement Moore, but
mm-hmm.
there's it could be Major Livingston, this other gentleman who actually wrote it. So I'll let those people decide who the real author of that poem is. But the author of Kristen and the Santa Secret is myself, named after my daughter Kristen,
mm-hmm.
the oldest of our three, and based on how we told her about Santa Claus and such.
Were your music background, did that help you in terms of getting it to sync fairly quickly?
Well, I guess it helped, although my music background doesn't help me at all when I'm dancing. I can't dance a lick. I struggle a little bit to even play a note on a song on the piano, something getting down to the hands, I can sight read pretty well. So,
mm-hmm.
Music out my mouth, that rhythmically works out pretty well. But so I think it worked a little bit with the poetry and the writing. So.
Okay. Interesting. Before we get into the poem itself, let's talk about you. How was Christmas like when you were growing up?
Christmas, when I was growing up in the Fanolio family, was a great event. I'm the oldest of seven children, and so we always had a big house full there at our house. And as you can imagine, and it was seven children within 13 years. So my baby sister is just 13 years younger. So
mm-hmm.
seven of us, it's almost like every other year or every year
mm-hmm.
in a couple of cases. So we're all pretty close together and pretty close family, and which is good and bad. But but we would we all shared bedrooms, except my sister Kathy. How'd she get that bedroom by herself? Anyway. But I just strong memories of Christmas morning, and we all we'd be upstairs, and Dad would make sure that we were all standing on the landing of the stairs in our bathrobes and socks and or pajamas or whatever. You had to be all ready, and he'd always take a photograph from
mm-hmm.
down below shooting us up there, and and then we'd come down to Christmas, and It was just always a magical thing, with seven kids and presents for all seven kids. Not everything got wrapped. A lot of times it was just a tag and a
yeah.
ribbon, because Santa
mm-hmm.
didn't have time all the time. So
right.
Sometimes there was actually a curtain or a bed sheet
mm-hmm.
tacked
mm-hmm.
on top of the entranceway to the living room,
mm-hmm.
because if sometimes one of the stairs you could be at the very top, but you could lean over, you can peek in
yeah.
and see the Christmas tree, and so you wouldn't have that. You had to have the big moment of surprise and everything. So we'd always have music on and sharing gifts, and it was a free for all. Everybody opened up stuff, but it was a lot of fun. So
one of the things I've learned over the years is that each family, especially like in your case, being a large family, you guys have some sort of a tradition that you have mentioned, simply like in your case, sitting on the steps and being photographed by your
yeah.
dad.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I just remember, certain things. Dad always had to have the coffee. He had to have coffee. He had to have the record player going. Sometimes later years, it was the Christmas album from the Notre Dame Glee Club. He always wanted to have that playing. Chris, sing your part, he would say.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'd have, different foods. And, my dad's mom, my nonna, on
mm-hmm.
the Italian side, she'd
mm-hmm.
send biscotti and some other Italian cookies, and we'd get gifts from other folks, just different kinds of cookies. It was a lot of fun. So,
when did you guys get your presents?
It was always Christmas morning, always mm-hmm. Christmas morning, never on Christmas Eve. I don't remember. I remember going to midnight mass a couple mm-hmm. times when I was young, and I think I actually sang, you know, in a mm-hmm. grade school choir once, a long time ago at St. Bridget's in Loves Park, Illinois. Yeah, it was always Christmas morning. We may have been able to open one gift that we would have gotten in the mail that, you know, mm-hmm. definitely wasn't from Santa, you know, from a grandparent or something. We knew who
right.
that came from. So yeah, you can open one present on Christmas Eve or something like that. But to this day, Christmas Eve, that whole day is still my favorite day. Just it's you mm-hmm. know, the magic, you know, the anticipation, going to sing on Christmas Eve and at midnight mm-hmm. mass with our St. Henry choir, and it just the whole mm-hmm. day everybody's in a great mood, and you know we're busy cooking or getting things ready, but we find time to stop and pray and drive around as a family and see the Christmas lights and everything, and have a nice meal Christmas Eve, and mm-hmm. so that's kind of our tradition. We started a tradition with my own family.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is a nurse at Vanderbilt Children's Hospital, and she was working one Christmas Eve, and so our three kids were with me at church when I was singing at the first Christmas Eve Mass at 6.
Mm-hmm.
And so at 7:30, we were still waiting for Linda to come home, and so the kids and I went to Waffle House for Christmas, just to eat, you know. And they thought going to Waffle House was the coolest thing on Christmas Eve. And, because they'd sit at the bar and they'd get waffles any way they mm-hmm. want. And so, and that happened when they were kind of young. So every year after that, we went to Waffle House on Christmas Eve.
Interesting.
So that was kind of, and there's a, they always have a jukebox, and there's always mm-hmm. The Waffle House Christmas song. You can mm-hmm. play that on the jukebox, so we'd play that. But the last couple of years with the kids coming home from college and everything, they really wanted some good home-cooked food. So now on Christmas Eve, we go back home to our kitchen, make
yeah.
the same food, you know, waffles and French toast and, you know, breakfast and thick bacon and stuff like that. So, we, you mm-hmm. know, but it's fun to have just the and there's usually It's a Wonderful Life is on TV, or we have Christmas music, and we'll drive around and see the lights. Still do that, even though all kids are, you know, in their 20s now.
Wonderful. How did you find out about Santa's Secret as a child?
Boy, you know, you had given me a couple questions before this interview, and I saw that one, and I've been racking my brain trying to figure out, remember how it was, and I really can't remember. It must have been, all I can think I can remember is, you know, questioning, you know, if it was my parents. And I think, you know, sometime in June or something, you know, in the summer or something, I said something to Mom and just asked her, and she said yes, you know, because I was old enough to really know
mm-hmm.
if, you know, maybe I was still kind of holding on to the whole thing. You know,
yeah.
We told Kristen when she had just turned 9, which
mm-hmm.
kind of, you know, some people say that's too early. Some say it's too late. I don't know. It really all depends on the parent. So I really can't remember exactly when I learned. But even if I learned at a fairly early age, you know, we always kept the Santa secret in our house because
mm-hmm.
we always knew which of my younger siblings didn't know yet. So even though mm-hmm. I may have learned that secret, I became a Santa. To help my mom and dad too.
Well, very interesting. Coming back to your immediate family, certainly you have to address this issue with Kristen, your oldest daughter. Why did you write the poem, and what transpired in terms of the need to do such a thing, in terms of explaining to her in a nice, wonderful way to whereby, you know, it's like, okay, it's summertime, let me talk to you about Santa Claus.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple things. You know, I'm a fan of Norman Rockwell paintings, and there's that iconic painting of this little boy opening up his father's dresser and seeing in the the third drawer the Santa Claus costume, and he's turned around, facing the painter, so to speak, with that just shocked look on his face. And I didn't want that for my kids. I also didn't want them to find out on the playground. Of course they're with friends and talking, and everybody's excited about Christmas. I didn't want them to hear definitively from this group of friends about Santa Claus. And Linda and I really wanted to, we kept the secret going as long as we really enjoyed the whole Santa thing and the magic of Christmas, because you really enjoy Christmas even more seeing it through your children's eyes. The music, the decorations, the lights, it's all bright and different than the rest of the year, and so it's so magical. And so we wanted that magic, stay around. But we also, didn't want, once, the truth was learned, we didn't want there to be a lasting impression of, gosh, my parents just lied to me for the first 9 years of my life. We didn't want that. We didn't want that feeling to, we wanted some sort of a magical, empowering, good feeling to go forth, even though they knew the secret. And so that's why we created this method to tell our kids about Santa Claus in such a way that kind of empowers them with the understanding about Santa, and empowers them with an understanding of the true meaning of Christmas. I mean, after all, Christmas is a Christian holiday. And that we celebrate, the great gift of love that God, gave us by giving us His only Son, Jesus. That was the ultimate Christmas gift.
Right.
And, as I explained in the poem, we kind of resemble God in a very, very small way. We are His children. We, we're sharing that same love by, being Santa and giving gifts to our family and friends, no matter what size it is. So it's that sharing of love during Christmas time that we really wanted our children to understand, and in such a way that they would remember it, be memorable and magical, and would help them later on in years. Because let's face it, the belief of Santa, when a child believes in Santa Claus, they can't see this person, so they have to believe in faith. On faith, they he's an all powerful being that totally loves them and gives them gifts. And that concept right there is just it's just a short step from there to totally believing on faith the love that God has for each of us His children, and gives us gifts even though we can't see Him. So in a way, it can prepare children for a richer, deeper Christian faith if they make the transition appropriately. And that's what I hope to try to do with this poem, and some responses from some friends and other folks have been very positive in that regards.
Wonderful. Well, let's get to it. Please read us the poem.
No, I'll be glad to. Kristen and the Santa Secret by Christopher Fenoglio. 'Tis a secret more precious than silver and gold, with a truth that is sought by the young and the old. In the magic of Christmas and all its appeal, do you silently question if Santa is real? In a sleigh pulled by reindeer and powered by flight, Santa magically visits each house in one night. Then he fills all the stockings of good girls and boys with delicious confections and marvelous toys. There are numerous names for this jolly old elf: Father Christmas, Saint Nicholas, Kris Kringle himself. But the truth about Santa is more than his name. It's a Christmas conundrum that's rarely the same. So to millions of children who search for a clue, and their parents who long for an answer that's true, please consider this tale of a curious girl who discovers the truth about love in the world. When her father brings home a big tree for the den, and her mother hangs stockings and tinsel again, when the weather turns colder as snowflakes appear, little Kristen is certain that Christmas is near. Then she sings about Santa Claus coming to town, with a lilt in her voice, such a beautiful sound. She lights Rudolph and Blitzen and toy-making elves, and displays all her Christmas dolls high on her shelves. But the one she loves most is the man who wears red and delivers her gifts while she's sleeping in bed. A precocious young girl, she's determined to learn all she can about Santa before his return. As her mother bakes cookies that sweeten the air, helpful Kristen makes faces with icing and care. But her thoughts are on Santa, of legends and truth, so she turns to her parents with questions of youth. Can you tell me why Santa gets dressed all in red? Does he know to watch out for the planes overhead? Will he take all the cookies we put on the plate? Does he eat healthy meals? Is he watching his weight? Do his reindeer get tired? Do they ever get rest? Should we feed them some apples? Perhaps carrots are best. I just don't understand how he builds all those toys and delivers them here without making a noise. Peeking over his glasses, Father smiles along, so to savor a moment he wants to prolong, because parents can recognize innocence lost and will try to contain it no matter the cost. But the longing for knowledge should not be restrained. It's a hunger to nourish, an impulse to train. Still, the greatest protection for young spreading wings is a solid foundation for whatever life brings. After dinner, they walk down the street past the stores with the bright decorations and wreaths on the doors. All the lampposts are covered with ribbons and bows, and the courthouse has so many lights that it glows. On the corner, four Santas are singing a song, while two others are gracefully dancing along. Across the street, a tall Santa is ringing a bell, as a short one hangs garland and flowers to sell. Inside Norbert's department store, under a light, sits a Santa who poses for photos all night. With a white flowing beard and a red velvet suit, he is truly Kris Kringle, right down to his boots. When he shouts, "Ho, ho, ho," all the children rejoice. But there's something familiar in the sound of his voice. She has heard it before, causing Kristen to think, "Is this Santa, the plumber who fixes our sink?" If this isn't the one who brings toys on our list, did the real one retire? Did he ever exist? Quite confused and dismayed, Kristen speaks to the night. There are too many Santas, so something's not right. Once inside of their home, before anything's said, Kristen's parents lay down her two brothers in bed. Then they whisper to Kristen, "It's time that we tell you the truth about Santa and Christmas as well." With the mixture of wonder, excitement, and dread, Kristen nervously sits on the edge of their bed. Then the door is locked tightly so brothers won't hear the discussion about Santa and secrets so dear. With a wink, Father takes from an uppermost shelf a dark brown wooden box that he carved by himself. As he places the box in her delicate hands, her two parents are hopeful that she'll understand. With a slow, gentle lift, Kristen gazes inside to discover a bundle wrapped tightly and tied. She uncovers a clue to the jolly old elf when she raises a mirror and looks at herself. "You are Santa, dear daughter, like mother and me. There are millions of Santas, as real as can be. He's alive in our neighbors, our family, our town, which is why you see so many Santas around. When our father so lovingly gave us his son, 'twas the ultimate gift, a tradition begun. When we give to each other, we duplicate love and begin to resemble the giver above. We continue as Santas to spread the good cheer with our presence to family and friends far and near. But the size of the gift matters not if it's small, for in giving, his love is the present for all. Then her eyes widen brightly as knowledge appears. May I help you be Santa with presents this year? Yes, of course, Father says, with a smile and a nod. That is how we remember the goodness of God. So the next time you question if Santa is real, place your hand on your heart and describe what you feel. For within you, dear children, even as you grow old, is the love that's more precious than silver and gold. The end.
Fantastic. It's just so wonderful. I mean, it rhymes so well, and it can go on and on and on and on. It's just beautiful.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Who did the illustration for the book?
A local artist in Nashville, Natasha Tibbett.
Fantastic. I know you just read the poem on the air for us. It's not quite the same until you have that beautifully designed book in your hand, because it makes a wonderful gift.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Yes. Have had great compliments on the artwork. It's, mm-hmm. it's a nice little presentation of the poem. There's even a place on the inside cover, you know, that says, you know, this secret has been shared with, and there's a blank space, you know, for someone to set, you know, to share it with, you know, the name of their son or daughter or grandson or daughter, granddaughter.
Right. It's wonderful. It makes a wonderful gift, keepsake for sure.
Well, thank
you. Something like this, something memorable.
We've got, there are copies on sale here in Nashville at our local St. Mary's bookstore, but mm-hmm. it's also available online, KristenandTheSantaSecret.com. There's a website there that you can order it. It's also available on Amazon if you're going to bundle some purchases and want
right.
to get it through Amazon. But KristenandTheSantaSecret.com is the best place to get it, because then I get it. Get those orders directly, and you know, I can even, you know, personalize a book and for someone and send it out to you.
That's fantastic. So how can your book help parents do the Santa talk? Because you did it wonderfully well with your daughter. So how can they use it? Can you kind of describe to us how they can apply your book?
Yeah, there's a couple different ways, and certainly I see this book, you know, this poem, it's not really a children's book that a parent can just buy and give to their child and say, here, read this.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a book that parents should sit down with their child and read together
mm-hmm.
or read to them. And because you know, your child is going to have questions and you want to be there to answer questions. Now, you know, reading the book together, you know, could be one way to kind of slowly get into the whole topic of Santa Claus. And, as the child hears these words, the light will come on kind of with them, too. And I'm sure, mm-hmm. you know, is that true for us, too, Mommy? You know, that type of thing. And it's easier to, you know, talk about it then. A parent might, you know, get a copy of this book to read afterwards, but they also, you know, may do what we do, where, you know, we actually got found a little hand mirror, wrapped mm-hmm. it up into a cloth, and put it into this little wooden box,
mm-hmm.
and actually put it up on the shelf. We had this little entrance to our attic in our clothes closet in our bedroom, and you know, Kristen was 9 years old, and she didn't even know, you know, about that entrance to the attic. And so mm-hmm. I, you know, climbed up on a ladder and opened up that entrance and pulled down this wooden box. And that was pretty magical, because there was something she had never seen before. And so that was the idea. We wanted it, you know, the event of telling her to be just as magical, memorable,
right?
Going forward. And literally handed her the box, that Kristen, the secret of who Santa is inside this box.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's when she got, you know, her eyes, you know, kind of, you know, got wide. And it's like, wow, you know, this is the moment, you know. And
yeah.
so, I mean, that's kind of the idea, too. And so, you know, parents could do the same thing, you know, in any way they wanted to. You know, we actually have loaned, you know, our box and mirror to other, you know, friends, you know, who are getting ready to have the Santa talk, you know,
right.
with their kids, you know, and it's always, you know, the box with the mirror is always you know, underneath our Christmas tree every year. Mm-hmm. And now mm-hmm. we hold that, use that box to hold all the keepsake Santa lists
right.
that our kids made.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so parents can do it, you know, a number of different ways. I guess the key is, you know, of course, knowing your children and knowing how you want to raise them and, you know, when you want them to know. And,
right.
And so it's an individual question, you know, for every parent. I guess that's why I don't think I'll ever be able to do a public reading of this poem. I mean, this is pretty public being on the internet, and hopefully there aren't any young children listening right now that are forcing their parents to deal with this issue right away.
Yeah.
Certainly it would be very difficult to be in a big bookstore and just, you know, do mm-hmm. a reading like an author reading would be, because you never know if a seven-year-old would be walking by and hear a little bit of it and, you know, tug on mm-hmm. mommy's sleeve. Mommy, what's he talking about? You know, and that would just force the parent to deal with it before he or she are ready. And
right.
you never want that to happen. Never want to force that. You know, so that it's the parents that have the ultimate decision. But hopefully this is a message and a tool that helps them, you know, present the whole idea and really empower their children. You know, it, I mean, the image of a mirror is so powerful because, you know, Kristen saw her own reflection, and,
mm-hmm.
and that was like the first person she saw, you know, in the Santa box was, you know, and that's why it's so strong, is that, you know, the love of God, the spirit of Santa Claus lives within her, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we really wanted to empower her with, that understanding, and get, you know, just get past the, oh, you were, you know, lying to us, or, you know, he's not real or something. But he is real. I mean, there's
right.
And the spirit, you know, lives on. I mean, every day we hear about people being Santa Claus to someone else, helping
right.
someone else out. I read a great story last night on Facebook about a friend who had a childhood recollection of helping someone who needed a coat, and
mm-hmm.
and, you know, that person was Santa Claus for that person, you know, that Christmas. So,
and it's true too, because you don't have to wait till the Christmas holidays to be Santa Claus, because we all have the seed in us to do those things 24/7, 365 days a year.
That's right. I mean, the saying Christmas should live in your hearts every day of the year is so mm-hmm. true. And, you know, it's almost like your own personal ministry, you know, program.
Right.
You know, being a Santa to others, you know,
you can
spread that love to others, and, you know, be a Santa to, you know, people that really need it, especially at this time of year.
Fantastic. What kind of feedback have you received from parents that have used your book?
Well, one of the first feedback, I was at a meeting of a bunch of Catholic businessmen, and my mm-hmm. insurance agent actually told me, yeah, when your article first appeared in the paper telling parents how you did it, I cut that article out of the paper and put it in my sock drawer for about 4 years until, you know, our own children were of age, you know, because I just wanted to remember how you did it and what you
mm-hmm.
said and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's things like that. A couple months ago, I was just eating lunch, and a coworker I used to work with at a different company just, you know, recognized me and said, oh my gosh, just, you know, the book that you gave me, you know,
mm-hmm.
Years ago, I just used it just last month on my daughter, and it just was perfect. It was
mm-hmm.
thank you so much. You know, and it's funny how funny, you know, pleasing, I guess. That,
yeah.
You know, words that I write or a sentiment that I express, or, you know, sometimes in church, you know, music that I sing, you know, it really matters to people's lives and helps them, you know, with a difficult parenting thing to do, and hopefully, you know, people will see this poem as a way to help them empower their own children with, you know, the true meaning of Christmas.
Very true. And at the same time, not losing the magic of Christmas. I think that's the most important thing, because it's a very delicate subject to address.
No, it is. It is. And that's, you know, that's why the product Elf on the Shelf is so popular these days, you know, because mm-hmm. there's magic involved. I mean, you know, it's, you know, the parents are, you know, doing, you know, taking down an elf, you know, from the shelf in one place of the house, and, you know, the next day, you know, he reappears somewhere else, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's that magic, you know, to the young children that, you know, that's what they enjoy, and that's what we all enjoy, really,
right.
much about, you know, Christmas, and so we wanted to maintain that magic, because I, you know, presented in the right way, again, you know, as a kind of a precursor to, you know, our faith and knowing that, you know, it's mm-hmm. God's love, you know, whether through, you know, the magical Santa or even the historical figure of St. Nicholas, you know, who mm-hmm. gave money and, you know, treats, you know, to the children and stuff. I mean, there's, those are real sentiments that we want to embody, you know, instill in our children. It's interesting. There are some religious bookstores who don't want to even deal with the issue mm-hmm. of Santa Claus at all. They don't want anything related to Santa Claus at all in their stores because, for some reason, it acknowledges, you know, the presence of Santa, which is so contrary in their mind to the true meaning of Christmas. And,
right.
And of course, it is. I mean, it's so different from the Nativity story, and they're right. It can be frustrating as a little author, you know,
right.
with this book. Who's, you know, we're trying to, you know, kind of bridge the gap, you know,
right.
and acknowledge that, you know, in American popular culture, you know, Santa Claus is everywhere. And
they're missing the point from a standpoint of using Santa Claus as the vehicle, the tool to teach values, understanding. You cannot take things literally. I think sometimes we miss the point of using tools, vessels out there to get the message across. And your book, your poem delivers that wonderful teaching of values about we, people, connections, that we have the ability. If we give, so shall we receive.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's very true. I mean, you've got to acknowledge what, you know, culture is in there. It's not that you have to conform to the culture,
mm-hmm.
But there are tools out there that, you know, can help parents kind of transcend the culture and mm-hmm. focus, you know, their children on, you know, the true meaning of Christmas at the right time, while still, mm-hmm. you know, preserving some of the magic, you know, through the years. So, you know, because, you know, imaginative play is very healthy for children to, you know, imagine that they're so and so, and, you know, playing, you know, Barbie dolls or race cars or stuff like that. I mean, it's just,
right.
it's, you know, it's great for the formation of their concepts of themselves as individuals and into the brains. You know, so imaginative play is so important in development of children. So we encourage that. But, you know, again, there comes a time in the development of a child where they start asking questions about, you know, Santa Claus and, you know, how does he go all the way around the world, you know, in one night and all that. And when parents see that it's the right time that their children can understand, make the difference between magic and other things, then that's when they, you know, should have the talk with them and hopefully use the ideas from this poem that, you know, don't, you know, disregard the magic, but turns it in such a way that it empowers, you know, their children with a true sense of Christmas and,
mm-hmm.
you know, a true Christian sense of Christmas, you know, the act of giving, you know, through the holidays.
Fantastic. I know you mentioned this once before, but where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
KristenandTheSantaSecret.com is the website. People can go and read more about the book, see some of the sample illustrations. There's a buy now button if they want to purchase it. Then order it online, or they can also find it on Amazon.com.
How has writing this book impacted you personally?
It's really been a blessing to me because I feel like it's been something that was, you know, a great sentiment of love inside me, you know, for my children and what we did for our children, and just, the act of writing it and talking about it kind of has been a great way for me to share my faith and to share my talents, with people and hopefully, make a difference. And it's it's kind of like when I'm singing too in church, you kind of embody, the songs as you're singing and you're proclaiming, God's greatness, through song. And, it's kind of like a recipe for living where it's just kind of like living inside out. And, that's what I really try to do with my writing and my singing and just daily life is, first knowing, trying to look at the world as a child, innocent, and see the beauty around me and appreciate that for what it is. And then know that, God's love for me is, inside me. And then, then through my writing or through my music or my work or my relationships with other people, take that love that's inside me and live it out, share it out with other people. And that's kind of, my recipe for living, hopefully, and trying to instill that, in my children too. Because I know it's, Linda's same sentiment too. She has a hard job in the family. She works with young cancer patients at Vanderbilt Children's Hospital. She's a pediatric oncology nurse, and she's just an angel to so many of those patients. And she's my inspiration. So I'm hoping that through this book, this can help parents really empower their children with a sense of the true meaning of Christmas and a sense of God's love for them.
Fantastic. Well, speaking about recipes for living, I know you kind of shared with us some glimpses of your personal recipe for living. We're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Yeah, it's just to repeat kind of what I just said. I mean, it's a concept of living inside out. I gave a talk a couple weeks ago to a group where I actually showed some film clips. I also have written this film column for our local Catholic paper called Real Life Journeys, R-E-E-L, Real Life Journeys. And the whole concept of living inside out, I kind of showed them some film clips of being like a young child, being like a Forrest Gump who, really appreciates, he's a very simple mind, but by the end of the movie, he's so aware of all the beauty and the love that's in the world, and he's just so focused just on that. He just lives on that. So, that's, knowing a child, having a childlike love for the world. And then a clip from Harry Potter, like at the end of the fifth film where, Voldemort is trying to, come inside Harry's mind, and Harry uses the love that he has for his friends and his family, and he just concentrates on that love inside him and in his mind, and that just drives Voldemort out. So Harry feels that love, and he uses that as the power to help him in his life. And then, the final clip I used was just a scene from The Lord of the Rings where Frodo's standing on the riverbank, and he just, he wishes that he didn't have the burden of dealing with this evil ring, but he, hears the voice of Gandalf and knows that, even, someone small can make a big difference in this world. And Frodo just grabs that ring and makes the decision. He's just going to live for the love of his friends in the Shire, and he's just going to see that, task through. And so that's just another way of, knowing the love inside and living out, living inside out in the world and accomplishing some good things for people.
That's really wonderful. As an adult, what were some of your memorable experiences during Christmas holidays?
Oh, I would think, there's a couple. Seeing the joy on my children's faces as they, as they see the Christmas tree just filled with packages after Santa has come. Just the, that's one thing. Just the joy on their faces. The times we would spend driving around looking at the Christmas lights, with Christmas music on the radio, and digesting the Waffle House dinner and all that. and I really have to say some of my best memories are singing at church midnight mass with some dear friends and just singing some beautiful music, on Christmas Eve. That, such a strong memory for me, and it's just something I enjoy every day, every year, is singing around Christmas time. So it's a pleasure for me, and it's a great way to share everything with everybody in our parish and our family and such.
How has your children taken to you writing the poem?
It's funny. They each reacted. They're all proud about the poem, I should say, and because they told me so. I remember one time when I was reading a version of the poem. My youngest Tommy mm-hmm. said, "Oh, they should place their hand on their heart." That one of the mm-hmm. last lines in mm-hmm. the poem is, "Oh, Tommy, that's really good." So I used his message there, and Kristen was the first, and.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all kind of different. Kristen says now, "Wow, you make that sound such like a big event, but it was pretty traumatic for me." and it's funny. Each of the three kids, responded differently. She got wide-eyed and really mm-hmm, understood mm-hmm. it as was in the poem. Connor, our middle child, was more like, "Oh, okay." Just kind of easygoing about that, and then Tommy he took it really to heart too,
yeah.
and it was kind of a traumatic experience to him too. I don't know if it was just the stress of finding out or whatever, but yeah, they're all I tell them, never know. I wrote Kristen and the Santa Secret. I just may have to write Connor and the Easter Bunny and Tommy and the Tooth Fairy later on.
That may be a good one, you see. You got something over them.
That's right.
What can we expect from you in 2012?
Well, I am working on a version of the poem that will actually be packaged with an actual wooden box with a hand mirror wrapped inside, and with a bound copy of the poem inside. And the whole product itself would be called the Santa Box. It's
mm-hmm.
interesting, as I've been marketing this poem, folks just don't want to, they're afraid to talk about, the Santa Secret. I'm creating this product called the Santa Box that will help parents, mm-hmm. explain to their children the true meaning of Christmas. So, mm-hmm. That marketing line right there, could probably be posted on a billboard and not really give anything away. So I'm working on that and working on a collection of my real life journeys columns over the past 6 years and put that into a bound book too. So. This next year will be busy, but very, very fun.
That sounds really good. Any final thoughts about Kristen and the Santa Secret?
Well, I'm very grateful for you to give me the opportunity to talk about it and to share this very important family moment with the listeners. And in a small way, I hope that this poem is able to instill in children's hearts, the love of God and the as embodied, with Santa Claus, and know that they embody that love and that they should share that. And if parents feel moved to tell their children about Santa Claus this way, I think this can be a better world. I think it's a better way to find out than to find out on the playground or to be to think your parents have told a little white lie over the last couple of years. So it's a great Christmas sentiment, and I really truly wish everybody listening a very Merry Christmas and a blessed holiday and a great new year.
Fantastic. Well, Christopher, thank you for the great recipe for living you have shared with us earlier and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next year on Tuesday, January the 10th, to kick off 2012. My guest will be best-selling author Jackie LePin. Jackie and I will be discussing about her latest book titled Practical Conscious Creation, How to Use Daily Techniques to Manifest Your Desires in the New Year. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And Christopher, thank you again. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and your family.
Thank you, Johnny. Merry Christmas to everyone. May God bless us all.
Thank you. Bye-bye.